Okay, fine. So first, guys, I wanted to just polish off the Simcha on Yom Tov issue. Now, where we left off, so as we had seen, again, someone want to recount to me, right? Let's maybe do a quick summary of the whole Sugya, right? So we'd started with the Gemara on Lamed Bet, where you have the conversation between the Malachim and God, so to speak, where the Malachim want there to be Hallel on Rosh Hashanah, and God says they no, because it's Sifrei Chaim v'Sifrei Metim Petuchim Lefanecha, Lefanav. And we noted there that really you can see the Hava Amina, so to speak, of the Malachim, is that Rosh Hashanah, either they think that there's unmitigated joy, and that's why you need Hallel, and God responds, no, there's mitigated joy, but maintains the conclusion that there is some sort of joy, or they think that there's joy, and he says there is no joy whatsoever. And we noted that this type of tension comes up in the Gemara, and the Rishonim, then on the one hand, you have to deal with the evidence from Vayikra Chav Gimel, where Rosh Hashanah is included in the Mikrai Kodesh. Nehemiah, where clearly there is some value to celebrating on Rosh Hashanah, though it could just be that Rosh Hashanah. And the Gemara in Beitza, which invokes that Pasuk in the context of Mitzvah Simchat Yom Tov. And we saw that you have the Rosh's position, who takes the very hard line following Rav Hai Gaon, that Rosh Hashanah is straight up a Yom Tov with a full Mitzvah Simcha, included Mo'adim L'Simcha and Tefillah, and forbade fasting. The other theoretical possibility, though, as we've seen, that's not really taken, is that there's no Simcha whatsoever. It's only Yom Adin. There's no joy at all. You should fast. There's no... but people weren't really... again, that's part of... That might be the shita that the Rosh is polemicizing against, but doesn't seem to be what people want to accept fully. And the most prominent position that we saw in many of the Gaonim was some sort of hybrid, right, where... Either you fast in Yom Tov Sheni, which we said seems to believe that there's this constant tension between the simcha and the fear, and maybe when it's derabbanan it overpowers it, or fast symbolically in advance of Rosh Hashanah for 4 days, or something like that, right? The Shitah of Nachshon and Rav Nachshonai Gaon. What we had ended off with was Shulchan Aruch, where I wanted to argue that I think the position that's actually accepted, the halacha, is one of these hybrid positions. Because on the one hand, Shulchan Aruch says you shouldn't fast, there's simcha, but he doesn't really mean it, because then he immediately tells you that if you have the minhag to fast, so then, you know, people say that if you have the minhag to fast and you don't fast, so then it'll be an unlucky year and you'll die during the year, right? Which is which is very, you know, I saw people posting that, you know, I don't even know what to do with these, but the Chassam Sofer has a tshuva where... He predicts, you know, 200 years ago that Tav Shin Pei is going to be a terrible, terrible year, and Tav Shin Pei Aleph is going to be Me'ashpot Yerim Evyon, will be the redemption of the horrible year of Tav Shin Pei Aleph. So I hope he's right. I don't know what to do with these things. I don't know if it's because we did or did not fast last Rosh Hashanah properly. I don't know. Whatever we did wrong. You know, I have friends who've been playing catastrophe bingo, you know, on this year. Like, you know, we had a pandemic and, you know, war and, you know, they announced the possibility of an asteroid hitting and, you know, whatever, all the wonderful things that could happen. Now, another piece of evidence I would just offer to say that the maybe the position of Shulchan Aruch and Halacha is one of these hybrid positions is that even though we paskin, you shouldn't fast, right? That's Shulchan Aruch's preferred position. You shouldn't fast in Rosh Hashanah, which was one of the two nafka minot we saw in terms of Yom Tov. The other nafka minot that the Rosh had raised, which was the nusach of Tefillah, Mo'adim l'simcha chagim ezmanim l'sason, we don't include in Tefillah, right? We don't include the full-throated endorsement of Simcha on Rosh Hashanah in our Tefillah, which does seem to suggest a possible middle position. And like I said, I just wanted to wrap it up. So let me share my screen for a minute. And again, it's you know... There we go. As you'll see, which of these final formulations is accepted? You know, how you understand Shulchan Aruch and the final formulation seems to be a bit of a dispute in the Nosei Kelim. So if you look here at the Magen Avraham, so let's do a little bit of biographies here. Who is the Magen Avraham? Again, you're always free to Google it. You'll still remember it better if you Google it and then say it than if I tell you. But who is the Magen Avraham? So very quickly, right? There are four Chelkei Shulchan Aruch. What are the four Chelkei Shulchan Aruch? Which are modeled in the four Chalakim of the Torah. I think that was Gavi. Gavi, go. Oh, yes. Yes, yes, thank you. Okay, I'll go to the first question, but you are correct, right? There are four Chalakim of Shulchan Aruch. Arachayim, which deals with daily life, and the Yomim Tovim and Shabbat. Yoredea, which deals with ritual law. Choshen Mishpat, which deals with financial matters. And Eben Ezra, which deals with marital halacha. And the two main commentaries on Shulchan Aruch Arachayim are Magen Avram, who is Rav Avram Gombiner. You're talking one generation or so after the Ramah. You're talking about the turn of the 17th century, right? The beginning of the 1600s is the Magen Avram, which is one of the earliest commentators on Shulchan Aruch. The Levush is slightly earlier, but the other main commentary on Aruch Chaim is the Taz, the Turei Zahav, which is written by Rav David Halevi Segal. Those are the two main commentaries on Aruch Chaim. The commentary that you might be thinking of as the main commentary on Aruch Chaim, which is the Mishneh Berurah, is a much, 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 much later work. Magen Avraham is the turn of the 17th century, and the Mishneh Berurah is written in the late 19th, early 20th century. The Mishneh Berurah, also known as Chafetz Chaim, right? Yisrael Meir Kagan died in the 1930s, and as Gavi has definitely heard from me several times, he has an obituary in the New York Times. We're not talking that long ago. We're talking someone who is relatively modern. So the Magen Avraham is it really a much, much earlier commentary by Rav Amram Gombiner. It was a bit of a controversial title to a sefer, because why do you think that the title to the Magen Avraham was controversial? Many people did not like it, apparently. Because the Magen Avraham is...
is it the copy off of the Shmon Esrei?
Well, really? It's more than that. Who is the Magen Avraham in Shmon Esrei?
God,
thank you. Yeah, it's not because it copied Shmon Esrei, it's because he took the name of God, right? Magen Avraham, the shield of Avraham, is God, which is, you know, possibly presumptuous to take that for your own name, as things go. So the Magen Avraham cites the following. He quotes the Bach. Now, who is the Bach? The Bach is one of the main commentaries on the tour. The Bach is the Bayit Chadash, and his name is Reb Yoel Sirkes. Okay, Sirkes, Sirkes. And he quotes Shemharshal, Rav Shlomo Luria, who is a contemporary of Rav Yosef Karo and Rav Moshe Isserles, contemporary of the authors of Shulchan Aruch and Ramah. He's a cousin of the Ramah, Rav Shlomo Luria. Lo achil dagim b'Rosh Hashanah shehiyu chavivim alav. Right, the Marshal also had a compromised position, which he would have meals, but he happened to really like fish, and he would refrain from eating fish on Rosh Hashanah. That was his way of nodding to the limited joy on Rosh Hashanah. V'ratzal l'ma'etav atel b'davar mesuyam, because he wanted to minimize his desire, the fulfillment of his desires, with something substantial. V'chein katav b'shala, b'shmo habach shal yibosh b'gadim chashuvim rak levanim. The shala, also, right, the shnei luchot abrit, he also cites the Bach as saying that he wouldn't wear white clothing. He wouldn't wear the fanciest clothes he had. And he thinks that what this means, if you don't wear white, you shouldn't even wear significant clothing. And he quotes from the Magid Meisharim, B'parshat Nitzavim, Shelo Lechol Basar V'lishto Yayin B'Rosh Hashanah. Now, here's where I said the reason I believe that the Shulchan Aruch is taking a compromise position isn't just the compromises that he lays out in Shulchan Aruch, but is this passage that the Magen Avraham alludes to in the Magid Meisharim. Now again, the Magid Meisharim, which is your next source, this is a very weird source. So let's talk about this for a minute. Rabbi Yosef Karo, who's the author of Shulchan Aruch, writes several very, very important svarim. What are they? So first he writes a commentary on the Torah, an encyclopedic commentary on the Torah, which is known as?
Beit Yosef.
Beit Yosef. Right? He writes a commentary on the Rambam, which is known as Yuri. What's his commentary? What's Rabbi Yosef Karo's commentary on the Rambam? The Kesef Mishnah. Very good. The Kesef Mishnah. He writes a series of tshuvot called Avkat Rochel. He writes Shulchan Aruch, which is very famous. But he also writes a very weird Kabbalistic work called the Magid Meisharim, which is not a normal Kabbalistic work, but it is the conversations that he had with the Magid. Who is the Magid?
The angels?
Yes, he had. Rabbi Yosef Karo claims to have had an angelic chavruta, the Magid. And he records his conversations. I don't know what this means, but remember, this is the same guy who wrote Shulchan Aruch. So I don't, you know, I see your faces. I don't know what to tell you. I don't know what to tell you. But Rabbi Yosef Karo claims to have had a consistent chavrusa with an angel, the Magid, and that the Magid, he records these conversations in this book called Magid Meisharim. So this is a very hard read. So I'm going to read this with you. But this is what the Magen Avraham invokes. So he quotes the Magid Meisharim, which is ordered al Seder HaParshiot. It's a very weird work for many ways. He also, as I mentioned, I think before last year, he in his introduction to Magid Meisharim, he tells you that the angel told him that how much God loved him. And he writes, he quotes the Malach as saying that he, meaning Rabbi Yosef Karo, is Mechabarna Rabba de Eretz Yisrael, right? The greatest author in Eretz Yisrael, Pasakna Rabba de Eretz Yisrael, the greatest posek in Eretz Yisrael. And it goes on like this, Yosef HaMuchune Karo Asher Melech Malchei HaMlachim Chafetz Bikaro. Right? Yosef Karo, who the God, the King of Kings, loves him. Playing off Esther, so I don't know what to do with this book. It's a fascinating book, but this is the Magid Meisharim. Okay, it's a little bit Kabbalistic-y. We'll try to read it. He writes, or this the language is very hard. Vabahani aser yomin, the aseret yimei tshuva, these 10 days. Dlomechal bisra, you shouldn't eat meat all 10 days of the aseret yimei tshuva. Udlo lemishte chamra, nor should you drink wine. Be'inach michle u'mishtaya aboy le'mizar, and the other things you eat and drink, you should be careful. V'train yomin de Rosh Hashanah, and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, remize le'bina u'v'chachma, they allude to the Kabbalistic sphirot of bina and chachma. U'mishum hachi uf b'nei Eretz Yisrael avdin train yomin. And he says, that's why in Eretz Yisrael you have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, even though you don't in Chutz Lartz. Again, I don't know what this means. Fine. Uvahai shat da'ani yomei de shabata batreyon shleimuta. Okay, he goes on. Let's skip down a little bit here, and he says ulahachi iboy lit ana behon behu ul alka bechal yoma. And the reason you should fast during a certain yomei tshuva, and you and even is lalka b'chol yom and get malkut every day. Again, I don't know what he wants, why he's beating people, but fine. La'achlasha li'etzer hara is to weaken the etzer hara. U'la'ayla b'chol yomin b'mayin chayin u'b'mikveh, you should go to a mikveh every day. U'listalka b'chesed, etc. And then he skipping down, he says, u'mikol makom, i'baylu l'meichel bu'bisra do'lo l'mishtei chamra. Right, and you shouldn't eat meat or wine, and you should limit even what you eat at all. And he says, even though it says, right, in Perkei of Nehemiah, that's just the regular person. But I'm talking about special people, tzaddikim. The two, and furthermore, the mashmanim haynu shemen v'chema v'chalav. Maybe the good food he wants you to eat is not meat, it's not simcha. He wants you to have oil and butter and dairy products, avolo basar, but not meat, v'lo v'chein b'shtiyah, nor wine when you drink. V'lo amar shtuyei note. He didn't say drink wine. Ela mashkin acherim di'inan mitukim, just other sweet drinks. Okay? So what does he tell you, right? It's pretty explicit here, what I was medayik already in Shulchan Aruch, but I think is even more explicit here in Rabbi Yosef Karo's treatment in Magid Meisharim, right? Which is that he thinks that Rosh Hashanah has a certain level of happiness, but it really is a hybrid day. There is no mitzvah of simcha per se. There's something else, right? There's something else going on. There's some joy for the hamon am, for the regular people, but real tzaddikim should realize that its true identity is more yira, and therefore they should either fast, or even if they're not fasting, they shouldn't eat meat, they shouldn't eat drink wine, they should have good food, but like, lasagna and chocolate milk, I don't know, right? Well, whatever, right? Very fancy Rosh Hashanah meal. But you see pretty clearly that I think our diuk yesterday in Shulchan Aruch, the fact that we don't say, we do tell you to eat and not fast. But we say theoretically you could fast, and even if you don't fast, you shouldn't have meat or you shouldn't have wine, or even if you do, right, there's something lacking. You do seem to get, you get the feeling that Shulchan Aruch at least takes a, Rabbi Zucaro takes this, does this happen to include the consumption of certain substances that may or may not be banned today? I don't know what to tell you. I don't know to what you refer. I don't know what you will be referring to. I don't know. You know, we don't have much halachic literature about things that may or may not be banned today. You know, we have one very weird tshuva by the Radbaz, in the context of Hilchot Kilayim, where he's trying to figure out whether whether hemp is subject to Kilayim. And then in the last, like towards the end of the Juvan, he says, and I heard that in Egypt they smoke hemp as marijuana and it makes them happy. And that's the end of the tshuva. And I have no idea what you're supposed to make of this bizarre tshuva. It's very, very weird. It's a very, very weird tshuva. I think drugs are very usher, but this is the only early citation we have. And it's in the context of Kilayim. And this is like an afterthought. I don't know what this means about Hilchos Yontif. I really have no idea. I think it's usher every day. Probably on Yontif too. Almost definitely on Rosh Hashanah. You know. I don't know what to tell you.
In the context of the Magid Meshorim.
What? I understand.
That was in the context of talking about Magid Meshorim.
So the Magid Meshorim, I don't know. The Magid Meshorim, I would assume, yeah. I mean, the Magid Meshorim sounds like he's telling you to limit things that are... Again, you know, I don't know if it's just wine. He doesn't tell you about other alcoholic drinks, let's say. Right? Or anything else. It does seem to be like he wants to minimize joy. Illegal joys, I think, are definitely off the table, but even, you know, legal ones, it does sound to be like he's limiting it. Again, does he think wine is different? Would he endorse having schnapps or something like that? I mean, they're disgusting, but would he formally ban it? I don't know. Okay, so that is, I think the evidence I would have in Shulchan Aruch that you have this. And if you look, continuing the Magen Avraham, you'll see that he says Yesh Mekamot Hamitanein Sarach Lilmod Kol Hayom Dechein Shemitanein Mekri Kulu LaHashem. He says if you fast, so then you don't have to learn all day because fasting itself is Kulu LaHashem. And then he says you're allowed to fast Tainit Chalom on Rosh Hashanah. Fine. And again, in the Magen Avraham, following Magen Meisharim, I do get the feeling that he thinks that it's not a full holiday, right? It's something else. And again, I think the best formulation that we might have is that it's a Mikra Kodesh, right? It is a Mikra Kodesh. It is in Vayikra Chav Gimel, but it's not a Chag. And therefore, it might have certain right value of being happy, but it's not the full Simcha that is necessitated by Chagim. It's something else, which is Moadim or Mikrai Kodesh, which is, you know, something else. If you look, though, that's not accepted by all the Achronim, right? That's the way I think the Magen Avraham takes Rabbi Yosef Karo. But if you look, for example, in the Kaf HaChaim, is a 20th century Sfaradi posek. It's actually written by two different authors. It was finished off by Rabbi Avadia Yosef after the main author died. So I actually don't know who's writing at this point in our Chaim. But he writes, Ratzalomar Afshu Yom Din, even though it's a Yom Din, and you might have thought, therefore, that it's not full Simcha, he says, Mikom Makom Mitzvah V'shol V'samachta V'chagecha Shaykh Bey. He says, no, even though there's a Yom Din, so you might have thought you should minimize, there's a full Mitzvah of Simcha. Shigam Hu B'chal Chag. Right? So So the Kaf HaChaim takes the position of the Rush, right? That lehalach, and this is, seems to be how he reads Shulchan Aruch, against the way I'm suggesting based on the Magen Avram and the Magen Mesharim. He seems to say that lehalacha, we paskin that it's a full out chag, kedichtiv, tiku v'chodesh shofar, bekesel yom chageinu, v'chein emar b'nechem yo, echlum mashmanim shnei mamdakim, ki kadosh hayom la'adoneinu, v'al teyetzu, ki ched v'ad Hashem hi ma'uzchem. V'ot hayom Rosh Hashanah havei. And the Mishnah Berurah seems to take this position as well. Ratzel omar, af shehu yom din, mikol makom mitzvah shel v'samach le'vechagecha shayich bei. Right, so the Mishnah Berurah and the Kaf HaChaim both seem to take the position that lahalacha, we accept that Rosh Hashanah is a full chag with the mitzvah of simcha. I will just note that even though that's true, and this is, comes back to Yehonatan's formulation all the way at the beginning of the sugya, the possibility that maybe Rosh Hashanah is a full Yom Tov, it has full Simcha, and nevertheless there's like this magic outside factor that it's a Yom HaDin, and therefore it's full Simcha, but there is, right, it's going to be contradictory. That I think is actually the Kaf HaChaim's position, lahalacha, because if you look, even though he said it's a full mitzvah of simcha, he then says that Avol Mutar L'Tana B'Rosh Hashanah L'Tpalel Ad Chatzot Af Agav D'B'Shabbat V'Shar Yom Tov Asur. Right? He says, but nevertheless, on a normal chag, you're not allowed to fast even until Chatzot, but in Rosh Hashanah, you're allowed to fast till Chatzot if you're davening. And therefore, I think that lahalacha, you actually get a lot of these formulations. The Mishnah Berurah seems to take the position of the Rush. The Hamaskana is Rosh Hashanah is a full Yom Tov with full Simcha. Shulchan Aruch, I think, Lamaskana following the Magad Meisharim takes the position, no, it's not a Yom Tov, it's not a Chag, it's a Mikra Kodesh. There's some Simcha, but because it's not a Chag, the joy is Meikara, limited, and therefore it allows for a certain hybrid nature. We don't say Ma'adim L'Simcha. If you want to fast, you really could. Even if you aren't fasting, you shouldn't have meat, you shouldn't have wine, right? That's much more hybrid. The Kaf HaChaim seems to take Yonatan's position, which is, no, it's a full Chag. But even though it's a full-out Chag, and there's a mitzvah of Simcha, the reality that it's a Yom HaDin still somehow encroaches on that Simcha in unexpected ways, and therefore the Kaf HaChaim on the one hand follows the Rush and says it's a full mitzvah of Simcha, you're not allowed to fast, but you're allowed to fast until Chatzot if you're davening, right? Because you're davening, and that seems to be Yonatan's position, I think, right? That it's full Simcha, but there's a reality.
They know that as long as you're davening, you can fast. You have to stop davening in order to eat. Is that ever the case?
Yes, that is normally the case, right? Normally, you're supposed to make sure that you don't fast until Chatzot. In a positive sense, you have to avoid fasting past Chatzot, which is why either if you follow, if you think it's mutter, drink water before davening, which is obviously the majority position, which is how I very much paskin. So at least just have a cup of water before davening if you know you're going to be davening past Chatzot. In some shuls, obviously, they'll break for a kiddush in the middle of davening. Or something like that. But yeah, you really should make sure. During the summer, it's not a big deal. During the winter, people make this mistake all the time, right? Chatzot is like 11:30, and they fast until that's really problematic. Okay, Ezra, you have a question? Yeah. Yeah.
So earlier you said there was a position that not to, like on Rosh Hashanah, you shouldn't be wearing white, right?
Yeah, that's Magen Avraham quoting the Shalah, quoting the Bach. Yeah.
So I know on Yom Kippur we're like specifically supposed to wear white, like a kittel and all that.
Right, Right, so it sounds like he's more talking about don't wear really fancy clothes, which in his time that was probably white. I assume he, right, it sounds like he means more about fancy rather than the color white. You're right, on Yom Kippur there's the minhag to wear white. Most people don't have that minhag in Rosh Hashanah, the chazan does have that minhag. Right, many shuls, the chazan will wear a kittel. And again, I don't think the majority position is right. The majority position, I think, is much less limited, right? Which is to say, no, it's really simcha, but right. Meaning, I've never found anyone lemaisa who doesn't have meat on Rosh Hashanah. Though I'll be honest, I do know I have a very good friend of mine who is he is the grandson of Rabbi Teitz. If anyone knows Rabbi Teitz. Who was he was a leading posek in America in the 50s, and on, but like, you know, contemporaneous from Moshe, that he was the rabbi in Elizabeth, New Jersey, and that was son, and Rabbi Teitz is the rabbi there. Their minug, you know, on Rosh Hashanah is, obviously they have full Yom Tov meals, but they never go out or have guests, right? They feel like that's too frivolous on Rosh Hashanah. You shouldn't be socializing, right? So that, you know, people find different ways of nodding to the solemnity of the day. I've never seen anyone lamaisa do it in clothing. I think most people wear their, you know, normal Shabbos or Yom Tov clothing, whatever that is. In America, a suit. Here, probably not a suit. You know, a white shirt and dark pants or some odd. Yeah. But yeah, I've never seen anyone actually have this custom in practice. Okay, the rest of the positions here we'd already seen, so I think that really does wrap up the issue of Simcha on Yom Tov. And I just want to make a methodological point, is that in general, if you'll notice, like all the positions that we've seen at this point, we basically mapped out as possibilities in those first three lines of the Gemara that we did, right? We've now spent four shirim, but a lot of times this is true in a sugya, is that if you just take the time to read the original sugya carefully and map out the logical possibilities, okay, I didn't lose the internet, so that's good. That was just the lights. But you know, so often, you know, one of my rebbeim once said, right, that you know you're succeeding in lumdus when, you know, by time you've read the Gemara and mapped out the theoretical possibilities, you're able to predict the positions that will emerge in the Rishonim and the Achronim about 90% of the time, right? Or at least the general contours of their argument. And if you notice, right, even though we've spent four shirim on it, basically, all the formulations that you guys suggested when you read those, right, original three lines of Gemara on Daf Lamed Bet, basically, those were the contours of the arguments. Again, you didn't know all the sources. You didn't fill in all the arguments. But in general, if you spend the time at the beginning of a sugya mapping out the theoretical possibilities, you should be pretty prepared for anything that's going to be raised in the Mefarshim. And you know, as you've seen, you basically successfully did that all the way back on day one of the sugya. Now we've obviously, you know, put the you know, filled out the skeleton of the sugya and given it its full body. But the basic arguments, the basic directions we could take, we pretty much predicted based on a careful read and careful analysis all the way on day one. And that really should be your goal in any sugya, is to be able to successfully predict as many of the directions that are going to be taken by the Rishonim and, you know, or the Achronim, or just in general in the sugya. So I think you guys should be proud of yourself on successfully doing that. And reading carefully and thinking carefully through the sugya. We still have time, so I guess we'll start on to the